Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Galp's third quarter of 2016 results conference call and strategy execution update. Today's conference is being recorded. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Diaz, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations.
Hi, good morning, and welcome to our Q3 2016 results conference call. Joining me today is Carlos, who will start with our execution updates, and Filipe, who will run you through the quarterly results. At the end, we'll be available for Q&A, during which Thor will join us as well. I would like to highlight that we may be making several forward-looking statements. Actual results may differ due to factors included in the cautionary statement at the beginning of our presentation. I will now hand over to Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro, and good morning to you all, and thank you for attending to this call today. Galp has just celebrated its 10th anniversary since the IPO. This has been quite a transformational journey. At the time of the IPO, Galp was a small energy player focused on its downstream and gas activities in Iberia. In 10 years, the company grew into a mid-size integrated oil and gas company with a strong international presence, developing world-class projects in the upstream and supported by a competitive downstream and gas business. We have done so by transforming our company internally and by establishing strategic alliance with key entities in regions we operate. That's how we will proceed in our path. During these 10 years, we have more than doubled our share price and deliver a total shareholders return of almost 200%. We are just getting started. A special thank to all who have helped to make this transformational possible. I'm, of course, referring to those who continue to work with us and to make our strategy happen in a daily basis, but also to those who were here before and paved the way for this great project. Now back to what bring us here today. Q3 delivered a strong operational performance with an EBITDA up 14% Q-on-Q on the back of higher production and oil marketing seasonality. However, year-on-year, we are still impacted by the challenging macro environment. Brent has stood at around $46 per barrel during this third quarter, with unbalanced supply and demand, as well as high inventories. The benchmark refining margin was down both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter basis to $2.3 per barrel, following the lower gasoline and diesel cracks. On the positive side, the Iberian oil market increased around 4% year-on-year, mainly due to higher demand for diesel and jet, supported by a strong tourism activity this summer in Iberia. As for the natural gas market, demand decreased slightly year-on-year, reflecting a lower gas demand for electricity generation on the back of higher renewable and nuclear generation. Now on slide seven, to take a closer look to our operations during the quarter and starting with E&P activity. Our averaging working interest production stood at 74,000 barrels per day, up 35% from previous quarter. This was mainly driven by the ramp-up of FPSOs number 4 and number 5, as well by the startup of the number 6 in Brazil. FPSO number 1, Cidade Ângela dos Reis, and Cidade Paraty, the FPSO number 2, were back to their plateau production after completing maintenance work. FPSO number 3, Cidade de Mangaratiba in Iracema South, continues to produce at plateau level with the connection to the unit to the Cabiúnas gas export network expected during the fourth quarter. During the third quarter, FPSO number 4, Cidade de Itaguaí in Minas Tema North, was connected to the Cabiunas gas export pipeline, allowing the unit to reach its plateau during August, only 13 months after startup. So we have now 4 units running at plateau level, with one almost there. In fact, FPSO number 5, which started production in February in Lula Alto area, had its fourth producer well connected during the third quarter, with the fifth producer expected to be working by the end of this year. As for the FPSO number 6, which started production in last July, it contributed with one producer well during the quarter. During these months of October, we have connected 2 additional producers, and this unit is now producing around 80,000 barrels per day. This is a fantastic work from Petrobras with helping hands from our colleagues in Brazil. We currently expect to beat our production guidance for the fuel year, as the operations are running on schedule with a good performance. The expected exit rate for year-end is somewhere between 82 and 85,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. Moving to our projects in Africa, the offshore Coral South FLNG project in Area 4 in Mozambique saw the signature in October of the gas offtake agreement with BP. This contract ensures the sale of the Coral LNG volumes for a period of 20 years. This contract is, however, subject to a FID investment decision for this FLNG project. Regarding the Mamba onshore project, we continue to analyze the EPC proposals. In Angola, production from blocks 14 and 14K remains steady. In block 32, drilling and completion proceed in the development area of Kawombo, and the 2 FPSO units are being built in Singapore. On slide 9, we move now to our downstream businesses. As mentioned earlier on the macro environment, refining business has been impacted by lower refining margins. However, the high availability of our refining system, namely of the main conversion units, allowed for higher throughput during the quarter. Our premium over benchmarks to that $1.1 per barrel, with still some gasoline arbitrage opportunities between United States and Europe. As I said, availability was high with no relevant stoppage for maintenance in our refineries during the quarter. Meanwhile, during October, we have carried out some maintenance activities, namely our risk breaker at Sines refinery that took around 15 days. The FCC unit is expected to go over maintenance works during the Q4. The marketing oil products has a stronger summer, maintaining its positive contribution to results. The Iberian oil products market is recovering, and Gulf continues to optimize its clients' portfolio and to reduce volumes to lower margin wholesale clients. On the gas and power, LNG trading was impacted by fewer arbitrage opportunities, with activity in the quarter mostly based on structured contracts. This was only partially offset by the increase in sales to the electrical segment. On the regulated infrastructure business, the results were impacted by the well-flagged decrease of the regulatory rate of return, effective from July, from around 7.9% to 6.2%. As you may have seen, we have just concluded a partial sale of our business, but my colleague Philippe will go over to this in more detail, namely on the benefits of this deal to our financial position. In what concerns to the power business, we continue to see results normalizing after the steep decline in commodity prices during 2016. and benefiting from increased sales to the grid and to direct clients. I remind you that strategically speaking, this is a gas-to-power integrated business. Thank you for your attention. I will now pass to Felipe, who will go through the financial overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos, and good morning. Starting with the P&L on slide 12, during the quarter, Group EBITDA was down 6% year-on-year to 384 million euros. This was mostly driven by the lower refining margins. Quarter-on-quarter, EBITDA was up 14% on the back of our Brazilian production increase and a seasonably strong refining and marketing quarter. E&P EBITDA was up 43% year-on-year, 127 million, with the significant increase in production more than offsetting the lower oil prices. Also, upstream unit production costs continued to be diluted down on the back of higher production. During Q3, unit production costs were particularly low, but here we have a one-off adjustment from overcharges from previous periods. Refining and marketing EBITDA was down 25% to 180 million euros, but this is mostly a reflection of a very strong Q3 last year when refining margins were particularly healthy. Gas and power EBITDA is flat year-on-year at 73 million euros, with a normalization of the power business offsetting the lower rate of return on the regulated infrastructure business. So group-wise, we have EBITDA sequentially higher at 14% quarter-on-quarter, even if the sector headwinds continue to affect our year-on-year performance. Having said this, and now with almost 10 months under our belt, we believe we should be able to beat the top end of our EBITDA guidance of 1.3 billion for the full year. And this already considering the deconsolidation of the November and December EBITDA of GGND. Below the EBIT line, we have financial results of minus 16 million euros, includes a 13 million negative mark-to-market adjustment to the value of our outstanding hedges on commodities. Part of this was captured in EBITDA with a bit over 5 million euros realized during the quarter. Net income was 115 million euros in the quarter on a RCA basis, whilst under IFRS, net income stood at 91 million euros. The difference between the two relates mainly to a E&P asset impairment in Brazil onshore, which was partially compensated by a positive inventory effect during the quarter. On the next slide, CapEx reached 244 million euros in the quarter and, as one would expect, mostly allocated to development activities in Brazil. We expect full-year CapEx to fall near the midpoint of the range we had guided you to. To recap, the guidance was 1.1 to 1.3 billion euros. On our balance sheet on slide 14, our net debt increased by some 320 million euros during the quarter on a comparable basis. This was driven by the dividend payment and the investment in working capital. However, given the reclassification of GGND to available for sale, our net debt reported net debt was down to around 1.6 billion euros, considering the Sinopec loan as cash. As Carlos mentions, we have since closed the GG&D transaction. Slide 15 shows the pro forma September net debt considering the equity check of about 141 million euros, which we got yesterday. Net debt of 1.5 billion euros would lead to a net debt to EBITDA of about 1.3 times. At the end of September, our liquidity was very high, at around 3 billion euros, of which around 1.2 billion euros in cash and one credit line of another 1.2 billion plus the loan to Sinopec of 575 million. We will be soaking up some of this excess liquidity over the next few days. You may have seen that we have called one of our outstanding bonds. This half billion euro bonds will be early amortized on November 21st. I will stop here and we are happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please limit yourself to 2 questions per person. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Bruno Silva from BPI.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. The first question in upstream, can you please detail the one-off that positively impact OPEX in Brazilian E&P and what would be the OPEX per barrel excluding that effect? And taking advantage of that, what level of OPEX per barrel would be a good estimate for the fourth quarter of this year. The second question, just to confirm if the EBITDA guidance for this year that you mentioned, just make sure that is without adjusting for the perimeter changes. And finally, I'm sorry about that, but I just wanted to make sure that you are going to make an update on the Rio de Janeiro oil taxes, if there has been any news on that front. Thank you very much.
Hi, good morning, Bruno. And thank you for your 2 questions, or 3 questions. I will take the third one, and I will pass the first two to Philip. So in what relates to the tax in Rio de Janeiro, so we are working together with the other partners in Brazil. There are no major progress on that relation, and the strategy that we have implemented are being followed. What I can say on top of this is that we are expecting that the development in the oil and gas sector will be properly addressed by the federal state of Brazil in order to guarantee that the sector continues to take these dynamics. So we follow the strategy from one side. We have nothing, nor positive nor negative additional to share with you. I pass now to Philip.
Good morning, Bruno. Your first question on the production costs. This is related to a VAT type of cost on OPEX in Brazil. which we were not fully recuperating, which we're now making use of the tax credits. This equates to about $1.5 per barrel. You should expect unit costs to continue to decline given, you know, more volumes coming our way as expected. As far as the EBITDA guidance for the year, this includes 10 months of GGND, not 12. So if that's, so the, it's equal perimeter, but only for 10 months. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from Mehdi Ennebati from Societe Generale.
Hi, good afternoon all, and thanks for taking my questions. Two questions, please. The first one on your alliance with Petrobras. You recently announced that you reinforced your strategic alliance with Petrobras, and that means further cooperation on the oil and gas exploration segment. However, some other groups, such as Statoil and Total, also recently announced, you know, strategic cooperation with Petrobras. So I wanted to know what kind of value added can you bring to Petrobras compared to those big oil companies, and does this alliance mean that you are going to be together in some open areas, in some open areas, you know, in the pre-salt area in Brazil? And I wanted to know as well if you are part of the Statoil-led consortium, which intends to bid in the open area of Carcara in 2017. The other question is related to the working capital variation. So working capital went up in Q3. I wanted to know if this is essentially due to the reversal of the Q2 working capital decrease, or if it is also due to some inventory building ahead of the maintenance in Q4. And what should we expect in Q4 regarding the working capital variation? Thank you.
Good morning, Mehdi, and thank you for your questions. I will take the first two, and Philippe will elaborate on working capital. So in what relates to the MOU, or the strategic alliance that we have formalized with Petrobras, effectively this is to reinforce the relationship that in fact exists between the two companies, but in this case not only to explore opportunities in Brazil, but also abroad. So you ask, what can we get from this and what we can have to this partnership? So I will split it in three areas to simplify. So the first one is to explore in the upstream projects opportunities in the existing assets to optimize not only how to extract more volumes from those assets, but also which kind of new infrastructures we should build to guarantee that we optimize the value creation for those assets. The second one has to do with the potential opportunity of exploring in the divestment program that Petrobras is implementing optionalities for GALP. And of course, we always look preferentially to Brazil and in Brazil in the assets where we are already present. The third one has to do with joint training and research programs that are focused on the deep water carbonate reservoirs where we are present, and having joint work to guarantee that we can find solutions and increase the skills of our joint teams to getting more value from the assets where we are present. In the case of Carcara, and speaking for looking forward for the Carcara development, so we are not now sharing nothing related with future potential bid rounds, but what I can tell you is having Statoil in Carcará in BMS sites already. It makes no sense to partnering with third parties. But nothing has been decided for the time being. I will pass now to Philip.
Thank you.
Hi, Mehdi. Our business units have been doing a tremendous job over the last few years in reducing working capital levels, and there is a limit for how much we can do. So whilst Q2 was very good, so very good job, Q3 was not so good. So yes, there's a partial reversal, and we should expect that we would be at the current Brent prices. We should be operating in a band, which is somewhere between what we had in Q2 and what we now have in Q3. I guess where you're going to is that we should not expect this to get worse than what we had at the end of September, and it has no relationship with inventory building in anticipation of refinery maintenance. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from Michael Alsford from Citi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. Good morning, all. So I have two, please, on the upstream. So firstly, perhaps just around Brazil and I guess your technical capabilities. I think back to the Capital Markets Day, and you talked a bit about building in-house capabilities to perhaps in the future operate assets. And I just wondered where you were in that sort of build out of technical expertise and whether you're close to being able to perhaps take on operatorship and I guess it refers, I guess, back to your comments around the asset divestment to Petrobras. And then secondly, switching to Mozambique, you've perhaps been a little bit more cautious on your comments regarding Coral, perhaps relative to some of your other partners in the project. And I just wondered, there's been a number of sort of data points and progress on the project. Perhaps could you update us to where you are on the project and how, I guess, you feel that the returns that you could potentially generate from the project are versus your, I guess, thresholds for sanctioning projects. Thank you.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for your two questions. I will take the second one to make you an update on Coral FLNG projects. And I will ask to my colleague Thor to elaborate in the first one. So in relation to Mozambique and namely to FLNG project, we have just closed and signed the SPA with BP, which is subject to FID. We are also working in the EPCIC that will be also under the final approval process. And we are doing all the activities that we can consider as pre-FID activities, namely those that are related with the operating costs, the technical issues of engineering and details on equipment, seeing all the guarantees in terms of execution time, so things that are more pragmatic and practical, and that might affect not only the implementation of the project, but as well during the lifetime of the project. And there's, of course, two additional issues that are relevant and important for us. One is the funding, the financing of the project that has been one of the key initiatives in the last couple of weeks and still far away from guaranteeing that we will have the full financing for the project. We are working with different potential loan bankers and also with export credit agencies for the several countries that are involved in the project. And, of course, looking to the economics. So the FID, pre-FID initiatives are being fastening the last couple of weeks. As we have always mentioned in relation to this project, we always act as a contributor and finding solution and proposing solution in order to make this project profitable. And that's where we are. So I will pass now to Thor.
Good morning, Michael. Building operating capabilities is a strategic ambition for GAP and something we do step by step. Let me remind you that we as a company have built and operated 56 wells onshore in Brazil. We drilled technically, successfully outside of Morocco. And this year, we have, as operator, acquired exploration licenses in São Tomé and also in Namibia. But we do this then in a step-by-step basis. We have now approximately 60 people in our G&D team and another around 60 people in the development and production team. So we're starting to build also a critical mass, and in totality, some 250 people are directly involved in the DMP team, plus directly supported with engineering and with engineering and with procurement from the corporate staff, with another 150 people. So on a daily basis, approximately 400 people. In addition, we work strategically with the Harriet Watt University in order to build the skill set among our younger people that we are recruiting. And together with an international staff that comes from 16 different nationalities, I think we now have a very good mix between very clever, very eager, very learningful local employees, as well as a good international staff. So this is something where we are building day by day. We're not going to jump. We're going to learn to walk before we're going to run. And that's the development path that we have chosen. Thank you.
Thanks. So just to follow up, I guess when it comes to sort of looking at an asset or additional assets, it would be more as a still in a non-operative position and just taking a smaller stakes in those divestment processes for now, but as a building for the future.
We will not comment on that, Michael. We will evaluate that on a case-by-case basis, and then let's see.
Okay. Thanks to you both.
We'll now take our next question from Oswald Clint from Bernstein.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, the first question, I'm just looking, reading the comments about the continuous improvements in drilling completion performance and obviously the ramp-ups on these FPSOs. I remember you gave us some numbers on these back at the Capital Markets Day, but perhaps a tour is there as well. You could give us some more recent data points in terms of drilling days and months of ramping up and just where you think you could get those numbers to as we look forward from here. Please. And then secondly, back over Mozambique, I just wanted to know or confirm or clarify how much of your or how much capex you have allocated for Mozambique, certainly in terms of your forward capex guidance for the next few years, perhaps a percentage number or something like that. Thank you.
Hi, Oswald. Good morning. So as you have addressed directly a question to Tor, I will let Tor to answer to the first one, but just giving you the idea that Mozambique is worth about 20% of our capex for the coming years, so when we consider in our business plan. But I will now pass to Tor. Thank you.
Thank you. With respect to drilling and completion, there has been really a fantastic development on the Lula Sima field over time. As you will remember, we started up and we're spending more than 200 days drilling and completing a well. In 2014, we were down to and did it in 135 days. Last year, we spent 110 days drilling and completing wells. And year to date, we are now running at 89 days drilling and completing well. So a continuous significant improvement, and actually cost-wise, we are down 24% when it comes to the drilling and completion cost in Brazil from $110 million per well last year to year-to-date some $94 million per well. So continuous improvement. We are starting to get towards the bottom of the learning curve. So this huge improvement per year cannot be expected, but we still operate with a target of getting down to around 75 days of our long-term ambition on drilling and completion. When it comes to ramp up, there is a huge focus on now making sure that we have sufficient well inventory. So we have actually now drilled 102 wells out of the 152 wells that is planned for the Lula-Eretema field in totality in the first phase. And one of the key reasons why now ramp up is going faster is that we now have a well inventory, which means that we can focus a lot on the hookup phases, so that we put the wells and the units into production. And lastly, you know, symbolized with the Saparema, which on the 19th of October had its third producer coming on stream. So, yes, we continue to believe that the trend is to improve this. However, Lula-Eretema is a complex field, and there are differences from field to field. So the general guidance that we gave you on the last Capital Markets Day with around 12 months ramp up is still what we are using for the general guidance for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from Philippe Rosa from Haitong. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So two questions from me as well. The first one on the unitization talks, just trying to understand whether the potential changes in legislation in Brazil on this front could help the long talks that you are having with your partners to reach the unitization agreements. So just an update on that front. And secondly, on downstream, looking at your refining metrics, the percentage of gasoline and middle distillates this quarter has seemed abnormally low in terms of your overall output. We have also seen a relatively low weight of heavy crude. Did you have any major issues this quarter? The premium that you had versus the benchmark has also been relatively low. Could you just elaborate a little bit on that? Thank you very much.
Good morning, Philippe, and thank you for your two questions. So in relation to the unitization, so unitization that we have in course and is more advanced is on BMS 11. It is in Lula, in the south of Lula, as you are aware, is Lula-Eretema field. There's some issues, and there's one point that is relevant. The decision that will be taken in relation to this unitization process will be an anchor for the future unitizations in Brazil, because this effectively is the first one. And there's some complexities on this, because it's not only the unitization in relation to the south part of Lula, as it is the recognition of the existence of two different reservoirs, the Lula and the Iracema reservoir. So it's the two issues. Of course, their unitization is in Lula, but the both issues are to be considered together on the decisions that will be taken. What we will see is with this apparently more dynamics and the changes processes that are being taking place in Brazil, that, by the way, we have anticipated in previous calls, as you are aware, I think they will fastening the decisions, and we might have a unitization conclusion on Lula in the next year. So in what relates to the refining cracks, so I would say that if we compare year on year, we have completely normal operations in the refineries, and the arbitrage between Europe and United States has been smaller than it was in 2015. So effectively in 2016, the arbitrage was much smaller, and therefore we didn't take advantage of that. And what we have also experienced is that in 2015, the Eurobob and the NYMEX gasolines were much more aligned, and therefore the premiums that we get in that moment were also smaller. When we compare with the second Q of this year with the third Q, in that case we have a difference. But the difference is because the second Q was much stronger than it was in the past. So it's more the comparison Q on Q than year on year, because year on year we are aligned with what happens in 2015. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take our next question from Haydn Rashid from Morgan Stanley.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions from my side. I'm actually going to switch to the downstream a little bit because you've had a lot of questions on the upstream. But could you just give us an update on what the market conditions have been like so far in 4Q, the premium that you've seen so far, but also any plans on the hedging side, whether you plan to extend that program into 17, and sort of your thoughts around that. And then secondly, just a sort of slightly more specific question on the tax rate that's been growing over the past quarters, clearly in line with your growing upstream business. I just wondered if you could give us any sense on 2017. I mean, should we be thinking about this being a sort of, you know, comfortably over 40% for 17, or whether there are some other offsetting factors? Thank you.
Good morning, Item, and thank you for your questions. So I will address the first one, and Philippe will address the second one. In relation to the first one and the market conditions, in terms of the hedging strategy, we keep the same. So when we look to the forwards, we have the forwards at refining margins at $2.5 per barrel, which is below the levels that we have decided to smoothing our hedging strategy, and therefore we are not seeing additional alternatives to increase in 2017 the quantities that we have already hedged. And I remind you that we have already hedged 10% of our 2017 volumes at $3.33 per barrel. Looking forward in the market conditions, we are observing this year a very strong market in jet fuel. So the aviation is increasing dramatically in Iberia, in Portugal, and as well in Spain. That went to a 7% increase in the consumption, and as well in the diesel. So diesel is showing a stronger position also this year. In Spain, we are also observing an increase in gasoline. So we anticipate that the fourth Q, the diesel, at least the diesel, will continue to sustain our the growth that we are observing. And the jet for the aviation, it's still one of the key levers for the growing of the market not only in Portugal, but also in Spain. I will now pass to Philippe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aitam, the tax rate really depends on the assumptions we make on the mix of upstream and downstream. But if you take Brent next year at 50 and refining margins at, say, $2.5 for the benchmark, our tax rate should be around 50%. And this includes the Brazilian SPT, so the participation tax. Thank you.
Very clear. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
We'll now take our next question from Thomas Adolf from Credit Suisse.
Good afternoon. Going back to the upstream, to Brazil, firstly, in light of Petrobras' revised CapEx guidance recently, and that was driven mostly by efficiency gains, what implication does that have on your CapEx guidance that was provided earlier this year? I believe you've exchanged some notes between yourselves and Petrobras on some of the assumptions related to the Santos Basin. Secondly, on some of the work that you've transferred from Brazil to China or Chinese yards, as I understand it, there has been a number of hiccups in the summer with regards to the timely transfer of funds. So I wanted to know whether that has been resolved and everything is running very smoothly right now. And if I may, another question on Brazil again, or linked to Brazil. Your old CEO said in the past that the company needed to work on sustaining the business for the 2020s. And then subsequently embarked on an exploration campaign, which really didn't turn out to be that positive. But when you look at your resource base today and you take into account the blue sky scenario for your resources in Brazil via improved recovery factor, do you feel that you need additional resources to sustain the business in the 2020s, or do you feel that you actually have everything you need to sustain the business? Maybe this one is for Tor. Thank you.
Good morning, Thomas, and thank you for your questions. I will take the two first questions, and Tor will help us to address the third one properly. So in what relates to the Petrobras business plan, so I would say that is mainly prioritizing the deepwater pre-salt basin resources, and when we look to the adjustments that have been made, so there are some reshuffling in the FPSOs delivering, but with no major impacts in our in Galp business plan. We have already flagged some issues in the past, namely additional appraisal that will be required either in Lula West, where we will do a EWT during this queue to CAR to FPSO number one, and also additional appraisal in Atapu field in Yara, which also require additional information to decide the location of the second unit. So these are the key issues. In the CAPEX reduction that we take out from the business plan that has been presented, what we can see is efficiency gains that has more to do with things that Tor already addressed during this call. Has to do with drilling and completion, has to do with the better well productivity. So I think all in all, there's no major impacts on these. And of course, what we can see, Galp will have to review his own CAPEX profile. And if there is any impact in relation to this, it's an optimization that came out from the issues that I point to you. And we will have the opportunity to address them properly in the next CMD. So in what relates to the works that are being, they have been transferred to Chinese shipyards, effectively has to do with the hulls, and also some integration and the PEC one. The ones that are more with the, what we can say, a higher length from our side and a more scrutiny is the construction of the hulls from the replicants, from some of the replicants, namely the ones that have been transferred for the Chinese shipyards. So what we have done for that is implementing a kind of escrow account in order to guarantee that the payments from the JV will flow directly to the ones that are doing the construction. And we are following this issue very closely with our remaining partners, with Petrobras and Shell, because it is one of the key issues in terms of the execution profile of and guaranteeing that the timetable that
that we are following will be executed.
So will it be another escrow account or the existing escrow account, just making sure that actually the payment goes through on a timely manner?
There will be the escrow accounts required to guarantee the entire payment. So it's a daily basis management issue that we are taking together with our partners. So the most important is there's a lens and that there's a focus on this issue, because it's one of the key ones to guarantee that we will keep the move and we will comply with the delivering, with the challenging delivering execution process that those replicants will present to us. And I also remind all of you that the first one should be deployed and should be prepared for operate by during the first Q of next year. And it will be another starting point, because this is the first replicant unit that will be started, and the learning curve will be observed during the 2017. And of course, the lessons that we will take for that process will be applied for the coming units to the system. So it's something that we are working close, and it's one, if I have to flag someone that is complex and difficult for us today, is to address this properly. But the Asian shipyards are working properly and are delivering, and that is the key point. From our side, it's guaranteed that the money flows to them. So, thank you. I will pass now to Tor.
Thank you, Carlos, and thank you for your question, Thomas. As you know very well, Gulf is in this fantastic position to enjoying perhaps or at least one of the best E&P asset bases in the world. And I am very comfortable that with the current asset base we have, we will continue to grow until the midst of 2020. So our key focus is therefore aligned with our strategy. That is, number one, execute and deliver what we already have in the portfolio on time and on budget. And two, squeeze those oranges for as much as possible in order to get the maximum recovery. And I think it's also noteworthy to see that what have happened this year with the fact that Statoil has bought into BMSA is the de-risking for Gulf with respect to making sure that also this asset now is being developed in the best possible way. And then we have Mozambique, which is another giant in our portfolio, and we are getting closer to decision point also with respect to the development. So in this respect, I'm feeling comfortable on the asset base. On the other hand, as a company, we continue to consider our opportunities and what is the best interest for the company in totality, and we will continue to do so as the time goes by. Thank you.
So additional resources is more opportunistic than a necessity, in essence. That's your conclusion then?
We are continuously doing our job by looking into how do we maximize value for this company. That is our job in the board, and we will continue to do so.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Anish Kapadia from Tudor, Pickering and Holt. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. A couple of questions, please. I wanted to see on some of your upstream projects, are there any plans to revive the development of Nigage, Melange, Lucapa in Angola, given the improved fiscal terms and lower costs you're seeing? And I suppose a similar question for the Potiguar Basin discoveries in Brazil. And then a second one on Mozambique. I just wanted to confirm that you will participate in the Coral FLNG development if it goes ahead, or is there still a chance that you may opt out? Thank you.
Hi, Anish. Good morning. I will take the Mozambique to complement my previous thoughts, and I will address the first point to Tor.
We are doing our best to participate in LNG in Mozambique. It's the only thing that I can tell to you. And since the beginning has been the way we have acted and we have participated in the consortium. So, but economics has to prevail and value creation has to prevail. But we are doing all the best. So I will pass now to Tor.
Thank you very much, Carlos, and thank you for your question, Anish. With respect to Block 14 in Angola, the key focus we have on Block 14 is to reduce costs and optimize the activity that we have in the block. Also, then looking into the SG&A and how we can get more out of the services we have. That's one side. The other side is also when it comes to Block 14, is to see if there any opportunity to improve on the fiscal conditions that is framing that field in order to make any possible further development of the field more attractive. Before we have accomplished the latter, any further major investment in that field is not in question. But if improved financial conditions could be given, then it might be that we can make some business cases for extending and reducing the decline. When it comes to Côte d'Ivoire, basically the key issue in Côte d'Ivoire for the time being is to reprocess the seismic information we have. We are doing PSDM processing of it in order to better understand the structure. And only after we have done that, we will be able to decide what is the right way forward. Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Biraj Bukhataria from RBC.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I had another couple on Brazil, if that's okay. First one is on timing. I was wondering if you could be a little more specific on the FPSOs due in 2017. You know, are we looking at middle or towards the end of the year for those two when they're expected to start up? And then the second question, probably for Tor, is in terms of the day-to-day operations, has there been any significant change in the processes or the method of working with the introduction of Shell into the consortium, or is it more business as usual? So any color on that would be helpful. Thanks.
Hi, good morning, Miras. The first question, I thought I was already flagged, so basically we will have one additional production unit in Brazil in the first Q of next year and an additional one by the end of the year. That might be in the fourth Q or in the beginning of the year after. But we are pointing out for time being by the end of the year, let's say by the end of fourth Q. I will let now Tor to answer to you the second question. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Carlos. Thank you, Miras. We have experienced the entrance of Shell into BMS 11 as a very positive force with respect to that. They are really staffing up the organization and the focus on Brazil, and we have also done it on a more strategic level. So myself, I have bi-monthly conference calls with Andy Brown or his stand-in in order to discuss alignment on technical key issues in order to bring the asset forward. And I see that Shell and Gulf is very well aligned when it comes to having the focus on that. This is very much about trying to get more out of this asset than we initially had planned for. So I think we're very well aligned, strong support, and we really are enjoying the big muscle of the Shell Corporation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from Henry Patticott from UBS.
Yes, hello, everyone. Just one question left from me on your gas trading business. You had a strong second quarter, a bit lower in the first quarter. I was just wondering how the fourth quarter of the year is shaping up and what your outlook for 2017 is. Thank you.
Hi, Eric. Good morning. What we will have for the first Q and, of course, for the next year. The GGND will be deconsolidated from November onwards, and we will have that from now on, and it will be the case in 2017. Of course, in terms of the trading, we still benefit from the past structure trading contracts that has been signed in 2014-15. Of course, we will continue to scrutinize and to identify alternatives for additional trading volumes, which seems to be hard for the time being since the window of opportunity in terms of arbitrage are closed. As long as it will be possibilities or optionalities, we will benefit of that, and we will be attentive to those things. All in all, next year, I would say that less arbitrage trading opportunities, the structural trading contracts still in force, and GGND deconsolidated for the year long. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos.
We'll now take the next question from Brendan Warn from BMO Capital Markets.
Yeah. Thanks, gentlemen. I'll keep it to one question considering the length of the call. Just circling back to Mozambique and Area 4, probably left with more questions than answers. Can you just clarify, in terms of that 20% allocation of CapEx, is that at the full current working interest level? Your thinking on, obviously, Coral in terms of economics, and if you do elect to opt out, is there an agreed value for your stake, or how would that work going forward, please?
Brendan, good morning. I think what I have shared to you to you all is the maximum that I can say for time being. We are committed with the project, we are working hard, but I cannot elaborate more than I have said already. Possibly next CMD we will deepening and we will look in more detail for Mozambique. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Josh Stone from Barclays.
Hi, good afternoon. I've got two questions, please. Firstly, on the upstream, are you able to say what the 3Q exit rate of production was? And then secondly, in the downstream, looking at refining margins, we have seen pretty much a straight line recovery since September. When I look at that, a lot of that's been on fuel oil. So it would appear like the premium of diesel over fuel oil has narrowed a little bit. And if I look at that with the maintenance you're taking at 4Q, do you think it's fair to say the premium margin would be lower than normal in the fourth quarter? Thank you.
So, Josh, good morning. In the first question, so I would say it is high 70s. And I think that answers properly to your question. In relation to the refining, so I highlight that we will have a short shutdown in FCC during the fourth Q. And the compound and the elements and the sourcing of raw materials, we are always optimizing based in our LP model. So it is the ones that creates more value that allow us to choose the right crudes and as well to provide the markets. When looking to the first Q, the refining, the premium on the refining margin will be somewhere between $1 and $1.5 per barrel. So it's our guidance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Mark Kofler from Jefferies.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Just one final question from me, please. Over the last few weeks and months, we've seen some pretty big changes in terms of the very top of the company around the chair of the board and indeed their ownership. I appreciate it's difficult for you to comment, but any observations or color you could provide there would be useful. Really just trying to gauge a sense of the changes that have been happening at board level. Thanks.
Mark, good morning. This is not difficult at all, and thank you for your question. So effectively, our chairman, our former chairman, Mr. America Murin, has resigned for personal reasons that has to do with himself, but someone that we respect, is someone that has helped this company to, and has been one of the levers for the transformational changes that we have experienced in the last 10 years. So the coincidence between his involvement in the company and the way the company has developed itself, it's absolutely unique. And I think this is what I would call a generation transition. It's being made very, very well done. So it was well prepared. Our actual chairman, Mrs. Paola Murin, was already vice chairman in the company. She has been involved in the company in the last couple of years, and the transition is natural. The other change that has been occurred is the appointment of Mr. Miguel Ataide Marques, which is an independent lead director in the company, as the first vice president, or first vice chairman. I think that in certain way that improves the governance that the company has by having the leadership of the non-executive directors, the independent non-executive directors being participating in the relevant and key positions. So I think all in all, what we can see is a commitment by the reference shareholder with the company from one side, and the generation transition that has been well prepared and is a succession that for us is so as natural. So the strategy of the company is to keep as it was, to continue to follow the steps that we have and the seeds that we have launched in the past. And I think this is a natural movement, and thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Hamish Clegg from Bank of America.
Hi, guys. I enjoyed watching the share price jump when you said you're going to come in above your guidance range of EBITDA. Just two short questions, hoping for two short answers. After the GGND deal, can we expect you to sell more in 2017? Is it a sort of a platform to do some more? And secondly, you're drilling in Portugal with your partner Eni over the summer. Just wondered if there's any update on that well.
Hi, Hamish. Good morning. So very two exciting questions. So the second one is of course surprising. We don't elaborate on active portfolio management. You see, you always listen from us that we will promote that in an active basis and continuously, and therefore we are of course keep the attention for all the alternatives that we might have. The mention that you have referred, that you have made to our new guidance or the updated guidance, I think it is only a surprise for those that are not observing the company in a daily basis as you are. And I'm sure that for you and for your colleagues were not a surprise, taking in consideration the results that we have presented
in the third Q and the market conditions that we are experiencing today. I of course will not comment on the NI issue. I'm sorry, you probably know more than I, so I think it's worth less to elaborate.
No worries.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you very much.
We'll now take our last question from Alwyn Thomas from Exxon BNP Paribas.
Oh, good afternoon. Just a couple of quick ones from me. Could I just ask, given the exit rate of 82 to 85 at the end of this year, what does that mean for H1 next year, and does it mean that you'd be at the upper end of production guidance year on year, and how the sort of phasing of that will come in and what maintenance you expect early next year? My second question is just on the early wells on the Lula Iracema field. How long can the wells sustain plateau there? If you could elaborate on that, that'd be great. Thanks.
Good morning, Alwyn, and welcome. I think it is your first call, so welcome.
Thanks.
What I can tell you for the update that you have asked. So we will come with an update in our CMD next year. So I think I have already shared with you where we are today, the exit production, and as well the new units that will come to the system in the next year. So you know the existing information. I think it is enough to conclude. I think with the support of all the drilling and completion and, of course, the cost, you can take a complete view of the optimization process that we are ready. In relation to the sustainability of the plateau, so we basically design our production system for a shaping of having a 3 years plateau, but of course we are always working on that in technical terms in order to guarantee that we will extend that part. You can see that from the FPSO number one. So I will pass to Thor that will elaborate on that and will show and detail what we are doing in order to extend the plateau period. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Carlos, and welcome, Alvin. You know, the Lula Iracema field, as you will know, is a world-class field by any standards. But it's also a huge field, and it's a huge field characterized by the fact that there are very, very different behaviors within the field. And first, development plan calls for not less than 10 different production units being installed in the field. So I will hesitate for generalizing and speaking on a well-by-well basis. We are going to drill in totality 152 wells in the first phase of the development of this field. There will be very individual behavior from well to well, but as Carlos said, the base case for when the field was designed was that the plateau would be expected to last for around 3 years per unit. We are working very hard now to extend that, and on Angros dos Reis, we now believe that we can extend the plateau to 7 years. And the same way, we're now working unit by unit to see what can we do in order to extend it. And we start then with the low-hanging fruit, and low-hanging fruit is typically to see what can you do then of the infill drillings. There are unused well slots, and then it goes up the ladder regarding what you can do of debottlenecking, both with respect to water capacity, with gas capacity, and so on and so forth. So there is where we're working, and let me say that when it comes to the reservoir performance so far, it has really, really overall, in the totality of the field, really lived up to the expectations we had at the day when we put the field into production. And if anything, some of the wells has behaved even better than we dared to anticipate when we started. It's actually the fact of the matter now is that 10 of the 12 best producers in Brazil is actually in the Lula Iracema field. So I think I'll leave it with that.
Okay, thank you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our call. Thank you for your time and questions. As always, feel free to contact our IR team for further clarifications, and I wish you all a very nice day.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.